I'm not sick or struck dumb, or don't you know a kick when you see one can't quit. We're not done, we're gonna kick till the next one.
Hello fine people, and welcome to The Kick. This is a movie podcast on the Now Playing Network for cinephiles who dream in themes, and I am your host, Chance Solem Pfeiffer. This is a momentous episode, folks, because today we begin our second kick, and the theme is sports romances, all culminating in the release of the movie Challengers at the end of April. That's the Luca Guadagnino-directed, Zendaya-starring tennis love triangle picture. And so there's no better reason than that to go on this adventure of love and athletic competition on the silver screen. But I do want to draw some parameters as we get into this hybrid sports romance genre. There are so many sports movies with romances in them, and typically one member of that romance is reduced to a pure spectator, like Adrian believes in Rocky, doesn't believe in Rocky, etc., etc. But this kick is about movies where the immediate participants in the sports have skin in the game. If they happen to fall in love through the very mechanism of the sport they both play, even better. So perhaps no film exemplifies that formula more immediately, more literally, and really with so little else going on around it than 1992's The Cutting Edge. Here to discuss is a writer and a professor of art history and liberal studies at Texas A&M University Commerce. She wrote about The Cutting Edge last year for the LA Review of Books in a wonderful rom-com superlative series in which she handed this movie the prize of most illogical display of love. She is the author of books like Fashioning Politics and Protests and a scholar of the Pamchenko twist. It's Emily L. Newman. Emily, hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm really jazzed that you feel a passion for this movie and have written about it recently. So let's start with your history with it. I guess a two-part question. When did you first see it? And do you or have you ever cared about figure skating?
So the movie came out when I was about 10. So I don't think I saw it in theaters. But I'm pretty sure I started watching it, you know, when it hit TV. And we had the VHS copy of this film that I took to college and probably wore out. Now, I think I might even have two DVD copies because it's that important to me. It's a film that... my sister gives me her time because I always say it is my favorite film.
Oh, wow. All right.
But I think of it like, for me, it's like mashed potatoes. Mashed potatoes are like the comfort food of all foods. And Cutting Edge is that. It has humor. It has hard work and effort, good music. It's a time capsule of the time. And it's got the happy ending that you need to feel better. So for me, it's like... there are just times in life when you need this kind of thing, and it provides always. And I do care about figure skating. You know, we watched the Olympics growing up and always loved it. And I've always been drawn to women's sports, particularly. I was a sick little asthmatic kid who they made start swimming around the time this film came out. I was never a great swimmer, but I loved it. And, I swam in college, and this film to me, like, even though it's not the same sport, here was this really like badass woman who was confident and determined and really kind of out of the box thinker. And, Doug was someone who really loved the sport, and showed her how to love the sport again. So I think sentimentally, I am just caught up in this film, because it's what I want out of sports. It's the love of the game. It's the love of the event, the passion, the games itself, the Olympics, the country pride. It just has everything in it that I think makes it this really lovely and funny feel-good movie. That's hard to come by.
It's 1 o'clock. It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm just about 4 hours late here, Rita.
Rita?
Anita.
Gita. Gita!
Close.
Olympic star Doug Dorsey's the best hockey player in America. and he's about to retire. Kate Mosley was America's sweetheart.
Until Hercules here learns how to lock his grip, this will have to do.
And she's got a nickname that rhymes with rich.
What a bitch.
For both of them, the Olympics had become a faraway dream.
Here, you try.
Until someone...
Those are figure skates, pal.
...set up the ultimate blind date.
Who the hell do you think you are?
I'm a guy who came a long way for lunch.
Please don't let me keep you from the trough.
Enough!
The king of the rink and America's ice queen just became a team.
Don't quit your day job.
Would you please put me down? You creep!
Guess that move needs some work.
You've been doing what? I've been doing a little figure skating.
Finger painting?
As a matter of fact, I do have a boyfriend.
Let's synopsize real quick for folks who may not be familiar. I like to grab the IMDb one to get started. You know, people are free to yell at me if that shtick is getting old, but I, you know, they do an all right job and sometimes they're entertaining. This one reads, a temperamental figure skater and an arrogant former hockey player attempt to win the Olympic gold medal as a figure skating pairs team. Fair, Emily?
Yeah, I think that choice of the word temperamental hints at the kind of gender stereotyping that we have here with Kate being a strong woman. You know, maybe we'd call her a bitch sometimes, knowing what she wants, right? So I think that's a nice way of framing it, but also kind of alluding to some of the ways people might view the film. But I think that it tries to challenge that reading just a little bit.
Sure. We'll dive in a little further. So the film stars D.B. Sweeney as Doug, an Olympic hockey player nicknamed the Minnesota Machine. And at the 88 Olympics, moments from glory, he gets body checked into the rink shield. It's a very loose helmet in that moment. I think he should have tightened his helmet and develops a career-ending eye injury. At those same games, he runs into Kate, played by Moira Kelly, who undergoes a disastrous fall with her figure skating partner, and they don't medal, and it's back to the drawing board for her with a new coach and a new prospective skating partner. And where will she find that partner? Well, what about Doug? He's very available because he can't play hockey anymore, and he doesn't want to tend bar with his brother in rural Minnesota. So Kate's new coach, Wiley, is he Ukrainian? I think he's, maybe.
I think so.
Coach's name, this is important, Anton Panchenko. He tracks Doug down, because Kate is rejecting partners like crazy. At one point, the script says she got rid of one person because they were too sweaty, and another person because they weren't sweaty enough. I'm still not sure what that means. We have a crazy idea here that's so crazy it just might work. Pair a hockey player and a figure skater. So Doug doesn't know what he's doing, but he's a strong skater. Kate needs a partner with nothing left to lose, and needs to, as Emily said, rediscover her zest for the sport. And of course, you know, sparks start to fly between these two at some point. Literally, there is a New Year's Eve scene where there is a sparkler between them and sparks are flying. I don't think I have to explain too much more, but I should make mention of the Panchenko twist, which is the crux of Emily's article from late last year. The Panchenko twist is this secret, dangerous, heretofore unattempted move that the coach has devised, and these two plan to debut it at the 92 games as the ace up their sleeve. Quick tale of the tape: Cutting Edge came out in March 92. This is 1 month after the Winter Olympics in Albertville that are depicted in the film. Christy Yamaguchi won the gold medal at those games, famously. Movie made $25 million at the box office. It is rated PG. It is 100 minutes long. Gene Siskel really enjoyed it, which is funny to me for some reason. This doesn't totally seem like a Gene Siskel film. The Cutting Edge spawned 3 made-for-TV sequels that did not come out for another 15 years. It is directed by Paul Michael Glazer, who played Starsky from Starsky and Hutch. Let's start here. You write in your Avidly/LA Review of Books piece, that the Panchenko twist, the aforementioned move, is a metaphor for heterosexuality. Can you explain?
Well, I think pairs figure skating is such an interesting phenomenon on its own, right? Because it is gendered in such a way, you know, the woman is supposed to be smaller than the man so he can lift her up and throw her and do sort of things with her, so that literally the rules of the sport are written based on gender stereotypes, if you will. And I think there is a push to reconsider that, but we still haven't gotten anywhere in 2023. It's still, you know, very gendered. I mean, it's still very rare even to see a woman wear a pantsuit instead of a skirt, right? Like, that's still rare. And we're 30 years after this film. So the Pamchugo twist is this idea, like, these two people, you know, who were enemies and are approaching lovers at this point, are trying to figure out a way to come together to show off as best they can. And it's only with this impossible thing can they triumph. And it involves both of them. You know, they have to profess their love for each other. And you just feel like there's fireworks exploding when they do the move. Like, literally that climactic moment of sex and everything we've worked hard to achieve at this point. And bonus, you assume they win the gold battle. So it is the triumph of all things masculine and feminine coming together. And you can't, you know, it disrupts the narrative to imagine it any other way, right? The man has to be the strong one who can spin her around and throw her up and catch her. And she has to be light enough to do that, right? So it fits into this ideal that we have of how men and women should look and be and behave. Whether we agree with that or not, that's certainly what we've been told to emulate for so many years. But this gives it a sports edge. So maybe, you know, all types of people can like it a little bit better, I think, and makes it palatable, perhaps, in a way that it might not be if it was, you know, more sexy or maybe less defined.
Sure. Does it enhance the reading that you're talking about to also bring into the conversation that the move itself is physically and gravitationally impossible?
I think it does in a way, right? Like, perfection is impossible. We're humans, right? So it is sort of just completely ridiculous. But there is, like, I mean, the great moment, of course, I always love is the crowd reaction to the move. Like,
yeah,
my gosh, this is impossible. And it's just a bunch of people with, like, open mouths and, you know, like, and then that beat before they clap, right? That they've just witnessed something so magical. Gosh, I just love that. It's just so over the top. It's so ridiculous that I think if it had been anything possible, it wouldn't have been as fun. It wouldn't have been as dramatic. It wouldn't have been as exciting. Like, it would have just been like, oh, they just did a little spin. Okay, we get it. Like, it had to be the impossible, right? I mean, that was sort of the whole thing. This whole thing is impossible, right? The hockey figure, hockey skater who's injured, who, you know, isn't supposed to do anything. The woman who is a bitch and therefore hard to get along with. So heaven forbid she win a medal on her own. So it just is the culmination of all these things that weren't supposed to happen.
Bounce spin to a throat twist. And I catch her?
Sort of.
We can't do this.
Why not? We have all the pieces.
We have 5 weeks.
The Pamchenko twist.
Absolutely not.
What, do you expect us to name it after you?
No, it's a mistake. It's not the right time.
No, wait a minute. This is good stuff. I can do this.
So what are you saying? I can't?
Hey, if the shoe fits.
Hey, listen. I have been competing for 13 years, and nobody tells me what I can or cannot do.
Right. And we're going to talk about this more in a bit, but, like, you know, the actors can't, through no fault of their own, it's not what they do, but, like, they can't remotely come close to doing any kind of figure skating move. So if you're going to fake it, you know, fake it in a really, you know, over the top way.
Right.
Go big.
Right. And the other movies in the series that I do not recommend in any way, feel a little more grounded. They feel a little more possible. And that's just one of the many problems. And they're not like affiliated with this film really at all. I think the first one tries to be like their child is the center of the film, like Kate and Doug's child. Right. But by the fourth one, I don't think there's any connection whatsoever. It's just bad. And they're too, yeah, they're honestly too realistic. It's boring. Like I need the spark of the impossible.
Fair. So this is kind of a classic also slob versus snob rom-com formula. There's a class element going on here. How do you think the movie does in terms of navigating the gulf between these two characters who detest everything about each other and bringing them together, of course, in the end? How's the journey for you?
I think that's one of the things when I was younger that I couldn't articulate that I actually really liked about the film, because I think we, most viewers of the film are going to connect with Doug and his like hard worker attitude. Coming up, he, you know, got a scholarship. That's how he was able to go to school and, you know, lived in rural Minnesota. And Kate lives in Greenwich, Connecticut. And I remember the first time I went to Greenwich, Connecticut, and I was a grad student, broke as all get out. And some friends take me up there. I'm like driving around and there's like, oh, there's Judge Judy's like, you know, multi-billion dollar house. And I was like, oh, I know about Greenwich, Connecticut. It's in Cutting Edge. Like the idea that she has her own ice skating rink. I mean, that's kind of the dream if you're any kind of athlete, right? That you have that kind of facility. So it's like you have this kind of person that feels more relatable. And then you have someone that's just like the dream who has everything you could ever want. The aspiration, if you will. And so he's like, gets to experience sort of both of these worlds. And of course is like, oh my gosh, you have your own rink. Like, this is incredible. And the interior shots of the house, right, are just so luxurious. I love when they go to Albertville, France. They don't stay, you know, in the dorms where the athletes stay.
Right.
They actually stay in this like ridiculous mansion.
Yeah. Her dad rents it.
Yeah. So it's like the best way to like be an athlete in my book. Oh, you've got your own ballet studio too. And even the stereo that they fight on was just like the epitomes of like great stereos in the 90s. So I think that we're on that kind of journey with Doug. That's like, I've been like such a scrapper for so long, how exciting it is to like enter this life of luxury, but also like to really be able to immerse yourself in the sport, which honestly, as we know, is how a lot of athletes get good. It's by luck and having money, right? Or having good sponsors for that matter. So to me, it sort of tries to show both sides of it. And of course, they, you know, fight at the beginning. And one of my favorite lines is, you know, when she's meeting him and her coach says, oh, he's from Minnesota. She's like, oh, you know, Neanderthal. And he's like, no, that's south of Neanderthal. And I'm just like, genius. Like, done. Give it an Oscar.
There's a funny throwaway bit when Doug goes back to his brother's bar, which I think is called the Penalty Box, and it's like a raucous Friday night, and everyone's like, Dougie, the hockey prince is back! And they're like, so what have you been doing? And like, everybody falls silent. He's like, he has such a hard time saying figure skating, and someone in the back just goes, finger painting? Like, couldn't...
That's so good.
That's doesn't so even compute.
No. But like all good Minnesotans, right? They get on board. And, you know,
that's
like
true.
They, while they're in the Olympics, they do a random cutaway to the bar and everyone's cheering him on, you know?
Absolutely.
So, and they love their cold weather sports, you
it's
know?
It's still a winter sport. They'll come around. So this is a Tony Gilroy script who goes on to, you know, be the scribe of the Jason Bourne franchise, Michael Clayton, which is just an amazingly written movie. This is the very first feature script that he gets made. I don't know if Tony Gilroy means anything to you, Emily, but can you tell that it is a Gilroy script and or a script written by someone who's about to become one of the few like very known screenwriting voices?
I can't speak to all of his films, but a film that you didn't mention that he did is Proof of Life, which...
Yeah. Russell Crowe, Meg Ryan.
Yeah. classic Meg Ryan. I actually wrote a paper about it in college. And I think what I didn't connect at the time that these were the two, he was the writer of both these films, but it actually doesn't surprise me because he writes really well-rounded female figures. And that's not always the case, especially when you have films that are more focused on men or what might be considered male stories or whatever, is that Kate is a complicated, sassy character who does have feelings, even though she tries to hide them. And of course, like Meg Ryan is sort of defying stereotypes in Proof of Life and the military and whatnot. So I think that for me, the thing about Cutting Edge that has always made it hold up over other rom-coms like Ten Ways I Hate It to Love a Guy. Yeah.
Or well, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Yes. Either one.
Combining them. You know, like those kind of films is that these are really developed characters. You feel like, you know, my sister is an actress. And so when they get a role, they like invent the whole backstory of a person and whatnot. And you get that sense here. These characters have full lives that they've lived that have gotten to this point. For the woman, that was so important to me in the film is that I felt like, okay, even as, you know, a young girl, like she had agency and power and wasn't going to put up with shit. And so I think that sense to me is a sense that this is a really good script. So it doesn't surprise me that he went on to do films where the characters are well-rounded and driven and complicated. Right. I mean, mm-hmm. They're not always good or bad guys, which I think is a skill that he has.
Totally. So I was kind of racking my brain here and feel free to weigh in. I think that figure skating might be the hardest sport for an actor to fake. Can you think of anything else that would be on that level? Where it's just like, you know, that eternal question of like, so how much of the, you know, skating did you do? It's just like very, like they learned and learned and learned, but like very little. This is impossible. Is there any other sport on that level where the actors just can't do it?
You know, I was thinking about this and I think maybe gymnastics.
Totally. That's a good one.
But figure skating has some gymnastics elements and it's on blades. I think that's the tricky part is that there's like a weapon involved with figure skating. That you get to avoid with most other sports.
Totally.
And, you know, this was like pre-CGI. Like, you know, if you watch I, Tonya, which is obviously a great film, there are moments where you can tell, like, okay, that's not like Margot Robbie's body. Like,
for sure.
And so this one, yeah, they you know, use doubles. But it's all real bodies. And I think in that sense, it's kind of commendable. And so I think it makes it feel more real. Like it just makes it feel more legitimate because it is. You don't question it. Like today, of course we question it. Of course we're like, yeah, you know, Margot Robbie could skate. So could Moira Kelly skate, but they didn't flip, right?
Right. Versus like in something like Challengers, probably every tennis ball will be CG.
Oh, of course.
I was going to toss a criticism out. But I feel like you have already sort of pushed back against this, and I want you to do so more if it feels appropriate. So because our way into the narrative is lensed through Doug going from hockey to figure skating, and as you also added, lensed through a blue-collar guy seeing this palatial training world, I kind of feel like Kate gets saddled with her half of it is often like psychological burdens, like the loss of her mom or just the yips, whatever happened at the 88 Olympics that might be a little underbaked. Fair criticism? Yay, nay? What do you feel?
I mean, maybe. I think they both have burdens. Connected to sports in terms of sport injuries, whether it's physical or mental.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about the way now people have sports psychologists and talk about things more. This kind of alludes to stuff that we weren't even really talking about, right? We're getting in your head, like getting the twisties, like Simone Biles at the Olympics. Like,
right.
We had that conversation. 92, we didn't even have a name for like sports psychology, really. What she experienced, messing up at the Olympics or whatever, I think is really interesting. But then you have the pressure from her dad and her deceased mom, all riding on her. Doug also has the pressures of, no money. And so I think that they are sort of equally pressured, but, and maybe this gets at what you're saying. The pressures on Kate are more mental, are more nuanced in a way. They're harder to articulate, right. Which maybe we could say, well, that is kind of also a gender issue in itself. But I think, the film tries to give her a little bit of like a bright spot with her fiance. He turns out to be a really big loser. So that's kind of a downer, but I think that is their kind of like play, like, oh, she's got a boyfriend. Conveniently doesn't live near her. Right. But like,
it's a great name. It's Hale Forrester or something like that.
Hale. He works in London. Like, it's so bad. I love Hale. Oh, the worst.
If I was going to like devil's advocate myself, I would say, yeah, there is that moment where like Doug is watching the tape of her falling in 88 the night before they do the long thing in 92. And I just kind of felt like that was the movie trying to have some kind of contrivance where Doug and the audience could be like, we could finally see like, what's this person's problem? It's like, why is he even watching that tape? Which I felt was like maybe a little not quite fair play to her. But the flip of that would be something I noticed on a rewatch this morning was like when he goes back to that, comedic moment in the bar to tell everyone that he's figure skating that we already alluded to. She's kind of legitimately like a little horrified and humanized that he hasn't told his family. Cause like that would be the only thing that she would want to do ever is like share with her, her broken family, this achievement. So there is that moment too.
Right. And I think that clip needed to be like earlier in the film a little bit.
Sure.
To help,
right.
to help him understand her a little bit better,
Yeah.
But I guess it's trying to really set up that like what she's missing all this time is real love and someone who loves her without her figure skates. Right. So,
right.
That's what he gives her when he doesn't want to do the move. Like, he's like, it's okay if you don't win. And of course, that's what we all want. We all want someone to love us just as we are without our gold medals. But she loves him too. That's why she has to give him the gold medal. It's that, that ultimate coming together.
Okay. Emily, in honor of the genre, let's do a lightning round, a montage round, because all of these movies are going to have just incredible training montages. The mid-Atlantic accents in this movie are wild. Dwyer Brown's especially, who plays Hale. He has where's that line? Where did I write it down? Where they're fighting with the stereo and he's just like, it's after midnight. I have a meeting at 6:30 tomorrow. It's like, oh my God. What is the most recent piece of pop culture you can think of where people in the present tense talked like Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn?
This isn't the best answer because I don't know if they necessarily talk like them, but they have the same attitude.
Yeah.
They convey the same like authority or I would say even superiority with their talking. And that would be Succession. And I'm thinking of the scene in the last season where Cousin Greg brought this girl to the party and she has a big bag.
Yeah.
And two of the people, they make fun of the bag and just how...
What could possibly be in it?
Right. And how just lowbrow that anyone, like she would take the subway, like is this big insult for them. And to me, that's the kind of Hale attitude I think that he brings to the film. Just this total, like, I'm just magnificent. Like, you know, how dare you carry this Burberry bag, you, like, you know, and of course he just bails on her, like breaks up with her, you know, at the Nationals and right before her famous skate, like just such a douchebag. So to me, that's, yeah, the ultimate kind of current comparison.
I love that. Thank you for reminding me of that hysterical episode of TV.
I mean, so good.
More psychologically scarring to children, participation trophies or keeping a gold medal case empty around the house for their entire lives?
Obviously the gold medal case. Yeah, like, wouldn't of course. Say like you're more of a failure at all times.
Oh my.
In your God. Office, like in daddy's office. And I go, you know, talk to my daddy who loves me. Oh, wait. Like, nope, I'm a big failure. Mom was a failure too, just in case, you know, we don't remember. Oh, can't imagine.
To your point about Gilroy, you can, there are like a lot of like screenwriting devices in here where like it may be a little ham-handed, but there will literally be something in the movie that physically represents that's what the twist is, that's what the gold medal case is.
Yeah,
you could see someone who's like, you know, really getting a handle on the craft.
Yeah, they're not just like churning out a lighthearted little film. They're making some dark little undercurrents there.
Totally. Okay, this is a dummy check for me. Why is this movie called The Cutting Edge?
I think it goes back to the weapon, the figure skate, the blades being sharp.
Yeah.
I've always thought the edginess too of like Doug's pairing with Kate, in terms of like when he rips up the costumes and when they have this fight over the music playing, because figure skating was so stodgy for so long.
Totally.
And I was irritated even in the 90s, and I still get irritated with the music choices, because now you know they can have lyrics in their songs.
Oh.
In figure skating. And some of them still do, like Carmina Burana. And I'm just like, not again. Like, you know, mix it up. And so I felt like it was so ahead of its time in that sense. So the edginess to me kind of is about these two people that are also kind of, you know, not supposed to be together, but they're not supposed to skate this way. They're really clashing in all the moments.
I remember watching figure skating with my grandma in Florida and seeing Oksana Baiul do like much more dancey things, and my grandma just being like, kiddo, this is not how it's done. This is cheap. The judges aren't going to go for this.
And she had all those feathers on constantly. Her costumes
were
so bad. And you could tell like she wasn't coming from money. Like half the people just like Tonya Harding, you know, didn't have Nancy Kerrigan money. So that's really interesting too. I always thought, and it's like you watch The Cutting Edge today, and if you look at figure skating costumes that they're doing now, they so nailed it. They really predicted what people would be wearing, just simple, especially the men, like a simple shirt and a pant, like more like clothes you would see, not crazy sparkly costumes.
I like that he at one point kind of threatened to skate in jeans, I think. And I like kind of wanted that to happen really bad.
So much. So much.
I wish I did see one of those, you know, figure skating expert debunks every figure skating movie you've ever seen videos. And someone was just like, jeans. I know you guys want it, but not possible. Can't lift your leg at all.
But I have seen contemporary costumes that try to create the look of jeans.
Oh, it's like real stretchy fake denim kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so not that far off, really.
Here's a very important question, Emily. Do we think Doug and Kate stayed together after successfully completing the Pimp Jack?
Obviously.
You're horrified by this question.
I can't even. Like, don't break my dreams. I mean, not only did, of course, the film verify it, the sequel, through their child, but... I know I have to.
That's true.
But I'm a hopeless romantic. I mean, this is my favorite film. So if I didn't believe they were still together, I feel like I'd be kind of...
Who would?
Yeah, so...
Yeah, who would be waving that flag?
Right. He saves her. Gets her out of that, like, Terry O'Quinn nightmare mansion, you know?
Oh, my God.
He's like, you don't have to skate every day. It's okay.
Yeah.
Sleep in.
Okay. Emily, on the 6.0 Winter Olympic judging system scale, can I ask you to rate these elements of the movie?
Okay.
The costumes.
Oh, a six. I mean, I've already said that, you know.
Right.
They were really inventive and simple in a great way, but we haven't talked about my favorite costume moment, which is at Nationals when the Wiederhauser twins were skating, which twin figure. I mean, I'm already in even though it's the American Nationals, the Wiederhauser twins, who feel vaguely German, are skating. And they're you know, set to beat our heroes. And the woman is going to do a turn. And as the announcer says, she got caught in his Lederhosen. And I don't think, like, that makes me laugh every single time. Like, that is just pure, wonderful comedy gold. And then you've got the "we are in line after." I mean, it's the second high point of the film for me, really. So I mean, costume 6.0, hands down.
Very glad you shouted out the Lederhosen twins.
I mean,
on a 6.0 scale, Moira's delivery of the phrase "topic."
7.0, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like
she invented the scale and can go higher.
Absolutely. I mean, I've posted about this film numerous times on Facebook because, of course, I have. And that's what everyone posts. Like, you just remember that from this film. And it's, you know, it's over 30 years old now. And I think that that shows you it's in people's consciousness somehow.
Douglas Benismore. Good. Hey,
oh, shit.
And, you know, I was maybe giving the actors a hard time about their inability to skate, but in that montage when, you know, it's Doug falling down over and over again, so sometimes the camera is on its side looking up at her, and it is Moira doing this very sassy break and turning around and delivering Topic, and that is some good acting skating.
You know, don't underestimate Moira Kelly. She was on West Wing for a hot second even, so.
Okay, on a scale of 6.0, rural Minnesota representation. Did you go to college in Minnesota?
I did. I went to college at Carleton College in southern Minnesota, and then I taught a couple years in Minnesota, and I have great affinity for the state. And I really think, you know, it's like a 3.5. Like, they start to get it, but they pull it back. Like, we needed more... Yeah, you betchas. And like,
sure.
You know, more
some ice fishing.
Yeah, ice fishing, some pops, some, you know, like Ludafisk or something, you know. I do think like the bar scene was pretty great though. The extra casting was top notch, but you know, there could have been a little bit more Minnesota-iness to it for sure.
Love it. 3.5. How about the evilness of former coaches?
You know, he's pretty good. I would give him a 4.5. He could have been a little meaner. But I like that they also didn't go like the low blows of like trying to like tackle her appearance or looks. They did make it like athletic-y. And he was very slimy. So, I mean, he had a lot of elements right. But of course, you know, today it's so interesting because the vaguely Russian coach is the good guy, where the American coach was the bad guy, which you would not see today in any way, shape, or form. So I do kind of twist a little bit. But yeah, he could have been meaner.
It's a very Gorbachev era reversal.
Yeah.
How about, can we rate the functional alcoholism of the current coach?
I mean, you know.
How's he holding up?
I think he was a 5, really, you know. He invented the Famchenko. Those drawings were top-notch, you know. Like, he was the skilled draftsman. So, you know.
That just, vodka, that killed me.
Smooth.
The move is so dangerous that he has to go fishing in his coat pocket for his own. Like, this can't be in any kind of bound volume of any kind. That would legitimize it too much.
And someone could see it too. Like,
That's true.
I'm surprised it doesn't have code writing on it, right?
That's right.
And that little hat he wears. So classic.
Coach. Okay, Emily. Our next segment is Truth or Trivia. I have some movie-related questions that you could answer, or some trivia questions related to The Cutting Edge. Which would be your choice? Truth or Trivia?
Let's do Trivia.
So you've already kind of disavowed the three sequels.
Right.
But can you name the sports that the convert character plays to come on before they go figure skate?
I'm pretty sure one is rollerblading.
Yes, inline skating. Very good.
Yeah. And then I feel like one of them might still be hockey. Like they might do the same.
That's thing. Right. They do the gender flip. I think Alex Delgado is the character's name. She played hockey and comes over.
Yeah. The other one. Don't know. Let's go gymnastics.
That's all right. Good guess. He is unfortunately a bad boy speed skater.
Oh, speed skater. Ouch. And that's a totally different skate too. Jeez.
Yeah. How is that possible?
Right. No way.
Can I ask you a truth question as well?
Sure.
This is something you emailed me about. You were very nice about wanting to do the show and liking the idea of a sports romance kick. But you brought up Sports Night. Is this the best Sorkin writing for you?
Sports Night? Oh, yes. 100%. I'm very, very opinionated about Sports Night. I feel that he did in Sports Night everything he did in everything else. Like there are scenes from Newsroom that I'm like, wow, I saw this 20 years ago in Sports Night. You also wrote. And I mean, that show is so underrated. And for a long time, you couldn't find it even on DVD. But Josh Charles, I mean, he's fantastic. And Peter Krause, like all of these players are there. Josh Molina, like it's such a good show, such good writing. And then of course, it didn't get a fair shake when it aired, so we never got a good ending. But I always tell like people who like West Wing or Newsroom, I'm like, well, have you seen the original Sports Night? Because it's infinite.
Mm-hmm.
So highly recommend.
This sports romance series ends with the film Challengers. Do you have any feelings at all in this film? Is this a film you're anticipating? Do you like other Luca Guadagnino movies?
I'm just stoked for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll pretty much see anything Zendaya does, because I think he's amazing. But I love a good sports movie, so I'm jazzed. I know you're talking about Wimbledon, which is just another underrated classic. I'm like, bring it on. And this one seems more, I would say, less comedy, more drama. Than certainly like Cutting Edge or Wimbledon. But I think that's what makes it exciting, because the trailer gives enough ambiguity that you're like, I'm not even sure what genre this is I'm here for. I'm so in. It looks so good. And I know Zendaya, like, because she's wonderful, like put in her work learning how to play tennis and worked, I believe, with the Williams sisters. So put in some time to make sure she did it right. So I've been waiting for it. And when you emailed me about this series, that was actually one of the films I thought about. I was like, oh, I wonder if he's going to see Challengers or do that, because I just think it's a pretty exciting film coming out. We don't get a lot of films about sports that are outside the mainstream, like besides baseball or football, basically. So it's just like, soccer has such a pretty big feel. But so to get women's sports films, to me, just makes me excited, because I just like seeing women like be strong in society. And so, I think that any type of film that does that will be great. And then this is also so interesting, because then, she starts as an athlete and becomes a coach in Challengers. So there's this whole, a woman bossing around a man. Oh, that's not supposed to happen. Like, it just seems to like upset so many stereotypes. So I'm very on board, and will certainly be saying it as soon as I can.
I'm hyped as well. Anything that you want to plug or direct people to? Any of your recent work?
No, you mentioned my book, Fashion, Protests, and Politics. And I have other stuff. It's all on my website, which is just simply my name, Emily L. Newman, like newman.com. Very straightforward and basic. Hit me up. You know, I'll talk about any rom-com with anyone anytime.
Well, thank you so much for hopping on. I really feel as though you may be the foremost fan of this movie and you're the right person. And thank you for your time.
I've been training all my life for this moment. I needed like a montage before coming on this, right? Of me like watching the film, talking to my dog about the film, like hyping myself up to get ready for this podcast. It would have been perfect, you know.
I'll send you a golden microphone to put in that empty case.